Walcott was not apostate, but the name had the desired effect. Walcott bared his teeth, and his hand went to a dagger at his side. He did not draw the blade, but it was all that Gareth had needed. Leffert, escort this gentleman from the hall. Ensure that he does not attempt to re-enter.
Gareth, you go too far one day. You think you're better than the royalty you serve. Your pride will catch up with you, Seeker.
Welcome to a T-Minus podcast for Murder at Avedon Hill. Murder at Avedon Hill is a podcast novel written and performed by the author. Hi, everybody. This is the T-Minus One episode of Murder at Avedon Hill. My name is P.G. Holyfield. We're almost ready to start the podcast novel, but I want to set the stage for Murder at Avedon Hill by reading a short story set in the land of Cairn, a story that affects events covered within the novel. The story is called Seeker, and it introduces all three power groups within the three provinces of Cairn. I'll be back at the end to talk a bit more about the start of the podcast novel. But before I get to Seeker, I wanted to take a moment to mention that Scott Sigler's second novel, Ancestor, hits Amazon.com on April 1st. Scott Sigler was recently featured in a New York Times article about podcast fiction, the link to which you can find on the Murder at Avedon Hill website at pgholyfield.com. Well, for all the listeners that have enjoyed Scott Sigler's free audio fiction, it's time to pony up. The goal? To have as many people as possible buy the print version of Ancestor on April 1st. Let's show everyone that podcasted fiction is more than a possible foot in the door at a publishing firm. Let's prove that the podosphere has a voice, and that we can take a novel previously podcasted for free all the way to number one on Amazon.com. And for anyone that's unsure if they want to give Ancestor a try in print, Scott has quite the deal for you. If you stop by my website and check out the show notes, you'll find links to several podcasts, including Scott's, that have inserted a PDF version of Ancestor in their feed. Yeah, you heard me. Not only has Scott released the audio version of Ancestor for free, he's also giving away the PDF version of Ancestor for free. Give it a read. Learn to love the force of nature that is Scott Sigler. Then go to Amazon.com on April 1st and make one of podcasting's greatest heroes number one. Enough of the sales pitch. I probably should have saved that one for me someday. So here we go with the short story, Seeker. Stay tuned after this story for some final thoughts and to hear the promo for a podcast novel I mentioned in my first episode, Phil Rossi's Crescent. Gareth Beckwin stared out over the hall, which was more than half full, just 2 hours past sunrise. Gareth stood on a dais, left hand resting on one of the back posts of Duke Orlandus Pell's throne. The grand chair was the only seat in the hall. The many benches of the great room had been removed in order to fit as many people into the chamber as possible. The commoners all had their reasons for attending the seasonal event known as the Airing of Grievances, and all looked forward to speaking to their liege lord. Duke Pell had not arrived, but was expected soon. Gareth tightened his grip on the throne post as his eyes fell upon Count Eris Holland. Count Holland matched his stare. Gareth managed to smile despite his feelings for the man.
I really have to work more in my bones game face.
Gareth immediately understood the significance of Holland's presence. 3 weeks before,
Eris Holland had requested a private meeting to discuss the Duke's refusal to allow the building of a temple within the city walls of Candelore. Gareth had declined on behalf of the Duke, noting that the Duke was already scheduled to visit Count Holland in 6 weeks to discuss this and other matters. Count Holland's presence on this day indicated that he was less than satisfied with Gareth's response. Count Holland turned to his right and spoke to what appeared to be a dwarf. No, not a dwarf, but a very small human. Gareth knew immediately that it had to be Olin Walkow, Holland's Aronic advisor. Actually, former Aronic advisor. Olin Walkow had been stripped of his advisor's medallions following Holland's annexation of 3 towns on the edge of the Wilderlands. 47 innocents died in the attacks, which were carried out without any attempt at diplomacy. First openly attacking border towns, without even consulting your duke, and now flaunting your presence at court during the airing of grievances? What is your game, Holland? Forcing himself to concentrate on something other than Holland and Walkow, Gareth noted another unexpected guest had arrived. High Priest Niles Balansor, of the Priests of Cairn, stood around 10 paces behind Holland. The commoners for whom the airing of grievances was meant were clearing the area around the priest, as if some sort of aura surrounded the cleric. Damn, this is no coincidence. I've got to take control of this situation quickly. Gareth took a moment to give orders to Ellis Crandall, the captain of the hall guards. I have to move some people out of the hall. If I do not return before the Duke arrives, you need to handle his procession. He motioned over to Count Holland. You'd better call up the second unit from the barracks. They might be needed before this day is done. Ellis Crandall nodded, understanding the possible danger. Gareth Beckwin was the Duke's Aronic advisor, and had been for nearly 8 years. Almost every recognized leader of the 3 provinces of Cairn had at least one advisor in residence. Part counselor, part diplomat, part military strategist. An Aronic advisor was loyal to the leader he counseled, but more importantly, was loyal to the land of Cairn itself. Thorn Twoblade had founded Thorn's Way over 250 years before, and the town had eventually become its own principality, surrounded by the 3 provinces of Cairn, yet governed by none. At the end of the Great War known as the Menacrat, Thorn Twoblade had negotiated a treaty between the 3 provinces of Cairn. Following the war, the leaders of Yu, Grosh, and Inara each made a request of Thorn for advisors, impartial observers that might serve to prevent a war in the future, like the Menacrat. Over the next 200 years, more and more leaders requested advisors. Every duke, count, and burgomaster. Even mayors of large cities had an advisor in their employ. The school at Thorn's Way drew thousands of men each year, all hoping to be chosen, just for the chance to become a future Aronic advisor. Ellis Crandall responded to Gareth's orders. Don't worry, sir. We'll be on the lookout for any of Count Holland's troops. Holland had not entered with any sort of honor guard, but his men would not be far away. Gareth trusted Ellis Crandall implicitly, and knew he didn't have to worry about security outside the hall, although these unexpected guests were another matter. Before stepping down from the dais, Gareth again looked over the growing crowd. There was at least a 10-foot circle around High Priest Balansor. It was as if a wall was pushing the people away from the cleric. This was causing quite a stir among the commoners as they pressed against the walls of the hall in an attempt to stay out of the cleric's way. A man was knocked down in the confusion. Gareth was surprised to see Balansor walk over to the man and help him up. A kind act from Balansor. Is it possible that some of Iberian's teachings are finally sinking in? The man had a blue sash tied around his head, covering his eyes, the provincial custom indicating blindness. Balansor whispered something into the man's ear, and then the man had a sudden look of pain on his face. The muscles on his face relaxed once the priest turned and walked away from him. So much for his kindness. He probably told the man he should stay out of the way. Gareth put a hand on the stage and hopped down to the ground. First Holland, then Balansor. He walked directly to Count Holland and bowed, showing respect for the position to which Holland was born. When Gareth straightened, he was forced to lower his gaze almost 6 inches to meet that of Count Holland. Lord, it's quite a surprise to see you here. Holland smirked. I note you did not say pleasant surprise, Seeker. Seeker. Holland referred to Gareth Beckwin's ability to truth read, a skill not uncommon among advisors. This ability was strong within Gareth, and Holland knew it. When focusing completely, Gareth Beckwin could not only tell truth from a lie, he could also sense the feelings and emotions of a person. Seeker was a less than complimentary name for someone possessing this skill. Count Holland mistrusted magic, especially magic that can be used against him. Gareth suspected that whatever Holland said today in his presence had been rehearsed. It humored Gareth to know that Count Holland had most likely lost sleep preparing for their short time together today. Gareth suppressed a smile. Pleasant is not the word I was thinking of, no. Sir, the purpose of the airing of grievances is to give the common man a chance to bring matters before the Duke. Many men and women are here to raise concerns about the activities of nobles such as you. This is why landed gentry, other than Duke Pell, of course, are not allowed at these proceedings. Gareth heard a snort from below, but refused to break eye contact with Count Holland. He knew the sound had come from Ulan Wakow. Gareth could feel the anger rising in Count Holland, but his outward appearance remained unchanged. Holland extended his arms towards both sides of the hall.
On the contrary, Lord Avisa, I am here as a representative of the people. I am every man in this particular instance.
His voice rose in volume.
The position of the Duke with regards to the religion of his people is a very important matter. I not only speak for the people of my lands, but also for the church itself. For the Duke to deny the right of his people to worship in the royal city contradicts everything he claims to represent.
Gareth interrupted Count Holland. Due respect, sir, but Duke Alandus Pell has never denied anyone his or her right to worship. He has only denied the right of the priests of Cairn to build a temple within the interior walls of Candelore, a practice that has been a matter of law for over 300 years. You know this law applies to the worshippers of any child of Aj, not just the followers of Iberian. Before Holland could speak, Gareth raised a hand and used his other to direct the count towards a door along the side wall of the room. Please, Count Holland, let us move this discussion to a more appropriate venue. Duke Pell is expected soon, and I assure you, he will join us once he arrives. Holland's planned speech had been interrupted, yet he followed Gareth without delay. Gareth walked beside Count Holland, wondering if High Priest Balancer would follow. Once he confirmed the priest was not with them, Gareth gave a hand signal to the two guards posted on either side of the anteroom door. The advisor ushered Count Holland into the large anteroom that held a long table and several high-backed chairs. Gareth followed through the opening, and the two guards immediately crossed the butt ends of their spears to block the doorway, nearly striking Ulan Wakow in the process. Wakow snarled at the two men. Gareth turned and kneeled at the doorway so he could face Wakow at eye level. He placed a hand on one of the spears that separated the two men. Wakow, you're not welcome here. I can't make you leave unless you do something to make me throw you out. Please, give me a reason, apostate. Gareth used the term apostate, an outcast from society. Wakow was not apostate, but the name had the desired effect. Wakow bared his teeth, and his hand went to a dagger at his side. He did not draw the blade, but it was all that Gareth had needed. Leffert, escort this gentleman from the hall. Ensure that he does not attempt to re-enter. Ulan laughed as Leffert called a guard over to take his place while he escorted the man out of the hall.
Gareth, you go too far one day. You think you're better than the royalty you serve. Your pride will catch up with you, Seeker.
Gareth Beckwin sensed the anger in Wakow and noted there was something else welling up inside of him. Gareth attempted to focus on the small man and attempt to discern more. Ulan seemed to sense this and immediately began to whistle to himself. The only feelings Gareth could read from Wakow now were of a sexual nature. It was an effective defense against Gareth's ability, though it would have been humorous if he had forced Ulan Wakow to stand in the hall while he used such lurid thoughts to block him. Could have been very embarrassing for the diminutive man, to say the least. Confident that Wakow would not give Leffert too much trouble, Gareth turned to see Count Holland already seated at the table, seemingly unaffected that his counselor had been barred from the room.
Count, as I am sure you understand, I must now go speak with the High Priest. I shall return momentarily.
Harris Holland didn't even turn towards Gareth as he waved his hand dismissively. Gareth resisted the urge to return to the table and confront the Count, instead moving back into the main hall. The two guards removed their spear shafts from the opening of the door on cue as Gareth approached and passed through. Gareth surmised this was all part of Holland and Balancer's plan.
keep the Aaronic Advisor off balance until Duke Pell arrived.
He had to move through the wall of people that had formed a wide circle around Balinsor. Gareth was amazed at how the men and women in the hall were both frightened and transfixed by the priest at the same time. Although it took much longer than he wanted to reach the priest, he crossed the barrier that the commoners apparently felt without issue. Gareth could see on Balinsor's face that he had reached him just in time, just before the spirit had taken over. He could feel waves of power emanating from the man as the blight of Iberian flowed through him. Gareth stood motionless and stared deeply into Balinsor's glazed eyes until the cleric blinked and focused on his as well.
Our Father Oz calls to me, and when I open my eyes to look upon him, all I can see is your face. That cannot be good.
I apologize, Your Eminence. I know you do not control when Oz speaks through you, yet this is not the time nor the place for such an event. Gareth, even though he did not personally like Balinsor, had no doubt that the priest was attuned to the River of Magic. And since he had personal contact with the power of Iberian during his own life, Gareth had no desire to embarrass the cleric. He indicated the anteroom from which he had just come. If you would like, we can wait for Duke Pell in comfort. I am sure he will be here before next bells. High Priest Balinsor accompanied Gareth to the anteroom without incident. Gareth scanned the room as he walked, still surprised that Balinsor had entered the hall alone. The throng that had surrounded the cleric dispersed once it was obvious a sermon was not to be delivered. It wasn't that they were so much interested in what Balinsor had to say. It was just that no one wanted to be remembered for not listening to a sermon from one of the three high priests of Cairn. Gareth noted that the blind man he had seen earlier had made his way along the wall to the other side of the room, the same side of the hall as the anteroom. Probably just looking for a place to sit. Sorry, old man. Gareth felt the spear shafts cross behind him, as if a door had closed them off from the rest of the world. Gareth allowed himself a small smile. 10 years ago, I would be shaking in my boots right about now. High Priest Balinsor, I welcome you to join us. Gareth sat in a chair at the opposite end of the table as Count Holland. By design, to sit at the table now, the cleric would have to sit in a place of lesser honor than the chair Gareth had just taken. Balinsor smiled, yet Gareth sensed the fire inside the cleric.
No, thank you, Advisor Beckwin. I sat through a 10-hour carriage ride just to get here this morning. I will stand until your liege lord arrives.
He walked to the opposite side of the table, attempting to look interested in a portrait of Duke Pell and his three children.
Psika, you amuse me.
Holland looked at Gareth over his folded hands. Gareth raised an eyebrow as he turned his attention back to the count. How so, my lord?
Look at you. You think you're so special, but you're somehow an equal to me. My blood is the blood of King Destrapeti, and is the same blood that flowed through our province's founder, Arbainu. You are nothing more than a rude man who thinks more of himself than he should. Besides that, there you sit, disrespecting one of the highest-ranking members of the Priests of Cairn. You need to learn your place.
It was difficult, but Gareth kept himself from smiling at Count Holland's frustration. That is not true, my lord. I am an Aaronic advisor, and that is all I have ever aspired to be. And as such, I am the representative of Duke Alandus Pell and speak in his name when he is not present to do so. I have not done anything today or on any other occasion that would be considered out of the scope of my position. Balinsor turned from the painting, eyes blazing.
Isn't it true that you were the one who convinced the Duke to deny the church's appeal to build a temple inside Candelor's walls? He would have rescinded the law if it wasn't for you.
The anger emanating from the High Priest hit Gareth like a wave. He had to keep himself from leaning back in his chair.
Too much anger, and mixed with apprehension, but of what?
Whatever recommendations I made were after much consideration and debate between myself, the Duke, and his many other advisors. For us to allow a temple to Iberian without allowing the same for the other children of Oz was simply out of the question. It was not out of malice or disrespect towards you, but out of consideration towards all the children of Oz.
Iberian is the only child that matters, advisor.
Gareth ignored the High Priest's statement, not wanting to enter into a religious debate. Instead, he turned to Count Holland.
And you, sir, you should refrain from attacking my position as an advisor when you still consort with Alan Walcow. I'm surprised you were even here after what happened at Lithica, Tyrese, and Wattis Glen.
The Duke has been waiting for the opportunity to speak to you on that. Gareth paused, attempting to focus on what Holland was thinking. The walls within Holland's mind were no match for Gareth, and Gareth had as much access as he could hope for, but what Gareth found within didn't make any sense. If he had to guess, Gareth would have to say that Holland was repeating numbers, over and over in his mind. Multiplication tables, to be exact.
You're a fool, Gareth Beckwin.
Balancor walked until he had reached a point halfway between the table and the door from which they had entered. Gareth nearly lost complete focus as he discovered that all he could read from the priest was the same counting of numbers, and something beyond anger and apprehension. Fear. Something is very wrong here. Gareth stood, attempting to refocus on a still-smiling Count Holland. At that very moment, Gareth was surprised by the unmistakable sound of an explosion outside the hall. It was powerful enough to rattle the walls of the anteroom. Dust rose from the floor and off the walls. He looked over at the door. The guards and their spears were gone, presumably to control the people in the hall. A second blast shook the room. Balancor did his best to stay on his feet as Count Holland sat with his hands now clenched to the edge of the table, still smiling.
Magic. Wow, Cal.
Gareth knew he needed guards to protect the two men in the anteroom while he took care of the exit visor once and for all. Gareth had almost reached the doorway when the blind man stumbled through the opening, seemingly disoriented from the explosions outside. Gareth looked past the blind man into the main room, and he could see that the 100 or so people in the hall were making mad dash for the exits, and that the 10 hall guards were attempting to control the situation, but with little success. He spotted Ellis Crandall pushing his way through the crowd towards the main exit of the hall. Gareth suspected that the additional guards he had requested had not had time to arrive on the scene.
Ellis!
Gareth called out even though he knew the captain of the guard would not be able to hear him. Count Holland and High Priest Balancor had not moved from their positions, and Gareth could feel them staring at the back of his head. Suddenly, a third blast. Balancor fell back against the table, but it kept him from falling to the floor. The only person not able to catch himself was the blind man, who fell into Gareth's arms. Gareth caught him with his hands and held him up. Gareth's right hand caught on the blind man's blue sash, which came away from the man's face as he pulled his hand down. It was then that Gareth Beckwin made two important discoveries. First, the man's eyes were clear, blue, and definitely possessed the power of sight. Second, the man held a bloody knife in his hand. Gareth's left hand went to his stomach, his shirt already becoming drenched with blood. Gareth held on tightly to the sash with his other hand, which was caught around the assassin's neck. The assassin appeared ready to stab Gareth again, but the smile crossing the assassin's face told Gareth that his work was done. Gareth grew weaker. He lost hold of the sash and fell to the ground. Gareth's body was failing. He called out with his mind in an attempt to communicate directly with Ellis Crandall. It was an ability he did not have much experience with, and his call fell on deaf ears as Ellis's concentration was focused on directing the commoners out of the hall.
The Duke. The explosions. He may be under attack right now.
Gareth was now on his back, and he could see both Count Holland and the assassin. It was clear the two men knew each other. The look on the assassin's face changed from acknowledgement to surprise as Holland sliced across the assassin's hand with his own dagger, a hand that had been extended for an expected handshake, or possibly a payment. Gareth had never seen a poison work so fast. The assassin slumped to the ground in even less time than it had taken Gareth to fall, foam seeping out of his open mouth.
My Duke, I failed you.
Gareth's sight began to blur as the life drained from his body. He could still make out the Count and the cleric standing over him. He could make out a prayer coming from the High Priest. He didn't know if it was meant for him or for the dead assassin at his feet. Even though he had no proof of the Duke's safety, he found the strength to sputter out.
You won't get Duke.
Holland leaned in close.
The Duke is fine. Don't you worry.
The numbers had stopped. Holland leaned in even closer, inviting Gareth to look into his mind.
Who do you think arranged all this, Seeker?
My lord?
Gareth's vision blurred even further as he began to understand the truth. He suddenly realized that it was no accident that he and Duke Landis Pell had rarely met during the last 2 weeks.
He said he was too busy. Too busy considering written complaints from the commoners. Preparation for the airing of grievances to see me.
Gareth now understood why the Duke had taken a sudden interest in learning the old Anaran alphabet.
It wasn't his practice to read his lord's emotions, but on the two occasions that he performed a cursory mind touch, just to see how things were weighing on the mind of his liege, all he discerned in his lord's mind was Agh, Brach, Brach. Holland mimicked Gareth's earlier statement. The Duke has been waiting for the opportunity to speak to you about that. Who do you think ordered me to attack those border towns? They have gone for years without taxation, simply because they fall outside some unseen boundary separating Candelore from the Wilderlands. I am loyal to the Duke, as opposed to you, who always steered him away from expansion. Now you see where this has gotten you.
Aerys Holland spit in Gareth's face, stood up, and then walked a few paces away with High Priest Balancor. Gareth's last thoughts were for his brother advisors all over the land. Never before had an ironic advisor been the direct target of assassination. With his dying breath, Gareth Beckwin lashed out with his mind, a psychic blast known to the advisors as the Death Knell. The blast was a call to his brothers to let them know what had happened. How far the message could travel and how it was received depended upon the abilities of both the sender and the recipient. Only twice in history had an advisor had enough of a connection to the River of Magic to call upon this power. Gareth, a prodigy within the Ironic Brotherhood, easily succeeded. Count Aerys Holland felt a tingle throughout his body as Gareth died. His bloodline had an affinity for magic, but he had always feared its call. Holland knew a magical event had just occurred, but nothing more. High Priest Niles Balancor fell to the ground, pain exploding in his head. Being attuned to the power of Viberion saved his life, but it would be weeks before he would have the strength to leave his bed. Ellis Crandall felt the Gareth death knell in the back of his mind. While he had no magical abilities to speak of, just working so closely with Gareth over the last 5 years had formed a bond that had suddenly and irrevocably been severed. He turned to the anteroom to see Gareth, the High Priest, and a third man lying on the ground. Count Holland stood above them, knife in hand, appearing very confused. Olin Walcott stood outside, laughing mischievously to himself. The explosions had gone off without a hitch, and he knew that Gareth Beckwin was getting his just desserts inside the hall. He never anticipated the psychic blast that ripped through his brain like an axe. Walcott slumped to the ground, dead before his head hit the dirt. Ironic advisors and others attuned to the River of Magic across Yu and even in Negrosh felt the death knell in different ways. Most could only tell that there was something very wrong in the world. Over 250 leagues away, far to the south, a man bolted upright in his bed, awakened by the psychic event. Aramis Cragan had been Gareth's best friend in school and was the former Ironic advisor of Prince Wren of Yu. Aramis immediately knew two things. His friend was dying or dead, and that it was murder. He was left with only one thought, a message as clear as if Gareth Beckwin had been standing next to his bed, whispering in his ear, "We are no longer safe."
Okay, folks, that was Seeker, and at the end of that, we got to meet a young Aramis Cragan. Aramis, one of our two heroes in Murder at Avedon Hill. Gareth Beckwin's death still affects Aramis Cragan. How much so? Well, we'll discover more about that as the story plays itself out. The first episode of Murder at Avedon Hill, it'll be coming soon. I'm nearing the end of my final book edits, and once that's done, I'll be able to concentrate on the podcast. In the meantime, I can be heard on Leanne Mabry's Tag in the Seam podcast. It's my favorite podcast, and Leanne Mabry's just a brilliant podcaster, and I'm not just saying that because she appreciates my sense of humor. On the way out, take a listen to a promo for Phil Rossi's podcast novel, Crescent. Have a great one, people. Next time, the mystery begins. I, for one, can't wait to get started. Talk to you later. Been listening to a T-minus episode for Murder at Avedon Hill. Murder at Avedon Hill is a podcast novel written by P.G. Holyfield and read by the author. Thanks for listening.
please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through magnatune.com. Magnatune.com. They are not evil. This podcast is copyright 2007 PG Holyfield and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 2.5 license.
The past never dies. It only sleeps. In a solitary station on the fringe of known space, the past is beginning to stir. And when it wakes, Crescent Station will be as the belly of the beast.
We shouldn't be in here.
I know that. I can't get the door open.
Hurry, please.
I'm trying. I can hardly see.
Open it.
I'm trying.
Hurry.
I know.
I don't think we're alone in here. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Crescent is the debut podcast novel by Phil Rossi, coming spring 2007 to a podcatcher near you. To subscribe, visit www.crescentstation.net. Some places are far darker than deep space. Crescent, coming spring 2007 to a podcatcher near you.